Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We're providing you news and commentary rooted in a commitment to individual liberty, personal responsibility, limited government, and the rule of law. Coming up, we're going to visit with Jim McTagg, former Barron's Washington Bureau Chief. Right now, we have with us Mark Shulman. Mark is the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's called HistoryCentral.com. It's great for kids of all ages, including you and I. I hope you'll check it out, HistoryCentral.com. Again, Mark Shulman, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. Mark, by the way, is in Tel Aviv, so he's right in the heart of what's going on globally and what's taking a lot of the press, which is, of course, what's happening in Israel. Maybe you could bring us an update, Mark.
Absolutely, Bob. So last couple of days, it was relatively quiet here in Tel Aviv. The last time we had two rocket attacks last Friday, and then this morning, suddenly at noontime, sirens went out and went off, and 10 rockets were fired in the area of Tel Aviv. One penetrated the Iron Dome defense system and landed in a suburb of Tel Aviv. It caused some damage to some cars, a little bit to some buildings, but only one person was slightly wounded in his leg from shrapnel from the rocket.
Hmm.
In the meantime, the war inside Gaza continues. Israel is making steady progress, but it's urban fighting, which is always very difficult. To date, Israel's lost a little over 100 soldiers in the fighting. They lost five this morning they went into a school to investigate and clear it, and the Hamas operator exploded a major bomb inside the school and killed five soldiers.
Mm.
So most of the northern part of the Gaza Strip has been taken over by the Israeli forces, and at the moment most of the battles is taking place in a town called Khan Yunis, which is where it's thought to be Hamas's current leadership is located underground somewheres, and where it's thought to be a lot of the hostages are located as well. The hostage holders for hostages is seemingly off the table at the moment after Hamas refused to bring out the last women and possibly two children, but the women, no one is totally sure, but the general sense is they refused to bring them out because they didn't want the women to tell the stories of what's taken place since they were captured.
Well, the stories that have come out have been
pretty
damning of what's happening with and how Hamas is treating these prisoners. The reporting coming back from prisoners that have been released are pretty damning. The other thing that's going on is there's a lot of bad press about the Israeli forces and what they're doing and the oppression of the people in Gaza. It seems like a lot of noise that probably makes things very difficult for the soldiers as well as the military.
Well, the soldiers aren't hearing it so much, but it is a very problematic. It's problematic on multiple levels. So first of all, let's state the obvious. Some civilians have died in this battle. There's no question. As always happens, there are civilian casualties, especially in urban warfare when your enemy is hiding behind civilians. So that's going to happen, and there have been deaths, and every death is a shame. The number of deaths per airstrike or other strikes is basically 0.8 per strike, which is way below the world average, which is 4.2. And it's, you know, in Syria and those places, even when the United States fought in Iraq, we're talking about something near 15 per strike. So the numbers are low, but they're still bad. And keep in mind the fact that there are no foreign correspondents in Gaza. All of the networks, etc., are using Hamas people reporting for them.
Yes, I
so
noticed that.
That's one of the problems. In other words, the numbers are all from Hamas. The reporters are all Hamas. No one is reporting from Gaza who's not working for Hamas in one way or another.
Right.
So that's a problem. And the problem, of course, is I watch some of the American news, and it leads every day with the suffering of the Gazan people, which I agree they do suffer. But you know, who brought it upon them? And there's no easy solution to that.
No.
Obviously, the idea of a ceasefire, what that means, a ceasefire means is Hamas wins, because the only way for Hamas to lose is to keep on fighting until they're eliminated. And anything less than that is a Hamas victory. It means they got away with what they did on October 7th, and they get to rule for another day.
Yeah. So, and now there are proposals that somehow the Palestinian Authority take over responsibility for Gaza. You know, that it seems to me that Russia or that Israel should create some sort of a situation to keep the Gaza safe for Israelis.
Well, there's no question. The problem is, you know, you need something, right? Israel doesn't want to annex the Gaza Strip. It doesn't want to provide schooling and everything else for the 2 million people who live there.
Right.
So you need some sort of a system after this war ends. And to be quite honest with you, no one has come up with a suggestion that's really acceptable.
Right.
The Israeli government hasn't come forward with a proposal. The Americans talk about a revamped Palestinian Authority, but what does it mean to be a revamped Palestinian Authority?
Yeah.
So who's going to do the revamping? The 88-year-old elected leader who was elected for one term, I don't know, 18 years ago? I mean, so it's unclear what can happen afterwards. Clearly something, there has to be some sort of plan, because Israel does not want to rule an additional 2 million people directly. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, so is the American position or the United States position helpful at all in this?
It's been very helpful up until now. America's position has been, destroy Hamas and keep going until you destroy Hamas. You know, they do say try to keep civilian casualties down.
Yeah.
I think that's what Israel's trying to do, but it's very, very difficult. Like I said, in urban warfare, in close quarters, it's a very difficult thing to totally achieve. The U.S. wants more humanitarian aid to go to the Gazans. At this point, Israel has no problem with that. The realization is that Hamas is going to get some of it. They've been stealing some of it. There are pictures of them fighting with civilians, taking some of the aid. But, you know, no one wants 2 million people to starve.
Right.
So I don't think there's any problem with allowing more humanitarian aid into Gaza. And the U.S. has been pushing for that. But overall, the Biden administration has been very, very helpful. Been very, very supportive all the way through. We'll have to see what goes next. I mean, the other part of this, which we didn't discuss yet, there are two other parts to this. One is, of course, the Lebanese border and the Hezbollah in the north.
Right.
And that's been pretty constant firing almost every single day. Today they fired a reasonable number of rockets into the Upper Galilee, and they fire anti-tank, which are line of the sight weapons, at Israeli and positions close to the border, most of which have been evacuated.
Mm.
And those are very problematic because they're line of sight and they're very quick, and there's no time either to send up a rocket to intercept or for the person who they're aiming at to find shelter, because it's almost immediate.
Mm.
So that's very problematic. And the last problem, of course, is the Houthis in Yemen, who work for the Iranians, and every couple of days they send a ballistic missile, a heavy missile towards Israel that they've gotten from the Iranians. So far, every single one of those missiles has been intercepted by Israel's Hetz arrow system. That's its long-range missile interceptor system that was developed against Iranian missiles, and they've worked very well so far against the Houthis. They've also threatened to intercept any ship coming and going from Israel, and they've also attacked all sorts of different ships. Yesterday, they seem to have tried to attack a French frigate with suicide UAVs, drones.
Wow.
The French shot down the drones before they could hit the ship. So they're a little bit of a problematic group of people, let's put it that way.
Absolutely.
There's talk of putting together an international coalition made up of the U.S., Great Britain, France, and whoever else has naval assets that can contribute to convoy ships coming and forth near there, and at some point deal one way or another with the Houthis. So that's a problematic area, but like I've said before, that's the one area the U.S. has always done in the world since the 1800s, freedom of the seas.
Absolutely.
The other problem that's related to all this, but not directly, but it's related to Iran, is the Iranian-based militias have been attacking U.S. forces that are still in Iraq,
yeah,
a small number of forces, almost every day. and they've been also been attacking the U.S. Embassy in the Green Zone of Baghdad. So this is a continuation of Iranian-backed militias who are almost bringing it to the point of war within Iraq. So just what else we all need is a new war in Iraq.
Yeah. Mark, just really appreciate this update. We have so much more to talk about. Can you stick around?
Absolutely, Bob.
All right, we're going to have more here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Are you looking to buy or sell a home? Make it a convenient and stress-free experience by calling the dynamic and trustworthy husband and wife team of Megan and Matt Chionis with Gulf Coast International Properties. Find out about their unique and complimentary post-closing concierge services not offered by other area agents. Matt and Megan Chionis give you the competitive advantage to command a premium price for your property. They personally attend all showings, create a marketing strategy for your property, and offer that complimentary concierge service to your potential buyer. This hands-on approach has helped them set several sales records in Pelican Bay and many at near-record prices. Megan and Matt Chionis understand that as an affluent buyer-seller, your needs and desires are unique. You deserve this level of service. Megan and Matt Chionis are passionate about the Naples lifestyle and they want you to enjoy it too. Call Megan and Matt Chionis with Gulf Coast International Properties at 239-269-5310. That's 239-269-5310. Do you have questions about your retirement? Ameriprise Private Wealth Advisor Jason Nardella with Nardella Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, can help. With the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach, you'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap to get you where you want to go. Call Nardella Financial Group today at 239-325-1041. That's 239-325-1041. Office is located at 9015 Stratistelle Court, Suite 103, Naples, Florida. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by the Foundation for Government Accountability. They help prepare elected officials to have winning strategies, and you can find out more by visiting the website thefga.org. Coming up, we're going to be visiting with John Mildemore. He's the editor-at-large at fee.org. Right now, we continue the conversation with Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's called HistoryCentral.com. Again, Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
So it looks like Putin has decided he wants to run for another term. I wanted to get your thoughts about that.
Well, absolutely. He wants to run in a free and open election, right?
Yeah.
No. Hasn't been a free and open election in about, I don't know, 20 years in Russia since he took office. He was, you know, elected once and elected for life.
Yeah.
And that's really what Putin is all about. He is going to try his best to show some sort of accomplishments in Ukraine as part of his strategy for winning this election. The great leader who's expanding Russia, make Russia great again. Let's put it that way, in a very different way.
Yeah.
How
about his popularity? What do you know about
it's
that?
It's very hard to know what his popularity really is. It really is. Remember, all of the media is controlled by him. You can't say anything negative; you get arrested. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very hard. You think anyone's going to give a true answer if they're asked in an opinion poll?
Yeah, no problem.
So it's really very, very difficult to gauge. It's always been difficult to gauge opinion polls amongst in dictatorships like this because you really can never get true answers from anybody. I mean, people are upset about the war on many levels because the casualties are high. But, you know, Russians are sort of used to it on one level, and B, like I said, they're very afraid to speak out, so it's almost impossible. And my guess is if he ran against Nevesky, who's been in prison now, he's, you know, his single biggest opponent, is he's imprisoned in in Siberia, and every couple of months, he has additional charges against him to make sure that he never gets out of prison.
You know, though, I would just offer this thought, want to get your thoughts about this, that Russia has always been dominated by some sort of a dictator going back to the czars. United States, of course, were founded on the whole notion of liberty here. We have a different culture and expectation. Any thoughts about that?
I don't accept that in a large way, because, listen, until World War II, almost the whole world, you know, with exception of France and England and a few places in Western Europe, were all dictatorships of some kind or another.
Yeah.
And slowly but surely, a good part of the world transitions. I mean, you can talk about Japan, right? Japan was a country that was used to having an emperor.
Right.
Japan is still has an emperor, but he's, you know, like the King of England. You know, the King of England. He doesn't have any real power.
Uh-huh.
And it's a true democracy. South Korea is a true democracy. Taiwan is a true democracy. No history of democracy there. So I think we're playing it. It's playing it wrong. It's talking down and looking down at the Russian people to think they don't want a democracy like everybody else.
Yeah.
Given a choice, most people want the ability to choose their leaders. Sometimes they're not given a choice.
Yeah.
And sometimes the culture makes it easier for dictators to gain control.
Mm-hmm.
But look what just happened in Poland. After the president of Poland had become close to a dictator, he hadn't totally made it to being a dictator, and there were free elections, and he lost.
Yeah. Those are great points, for sure. Well, let's move to Hungary.
So Hungary, we have Orbán, who is a dictator. Just like Putin, he's been in office now for, I believe, 20 years. When he came back, he lost once, and when he came back to power, he vowed never to lose again. And he's made sure of that. He's done it in a very interesting way. What he did was eliminate all the free press. How do you eliminate all the free press? It's an interesting method. What you do is you remove all sorts of you remove all government advertising from all the newspapers and radio stations and TV stations that is free and independent.
Mm-hmm.
You then, of course, cause their stocks to drop drastically because they're having trouble being a successful business. And then you have your cronies come in and buy it at a very low price. So there is no free press in Hungary anymore. It's all controlled one way or another by Viktor Orban. So he's also managed to establish himself as a dictator for life. And he's coming to the United States, I think, this week, I think, to speak at the Heritage Foundation to try to convince more Americans not to support Ukraine, because his friend Putin he and Putin are on the same path in many ways. He's been creating a lot of problems within the EU in terms of supporting Ukraine as well. He's the only country in the EU that has been opposing aid to Ukraine. So he's coming here to spread his wondrous words in the Heritage Foundation, much to the belief of, you know, most previous supporters of the Heritage Foundation is now hosting him. So.
And he also has a stance against immigration. I mean, he's definitely a nationalist. There's no question about that. That's part of his message as well. So that tends to resonate with some Americans.
No, I understand that, but people make a mistake here. That's one of the problems that I find is interesting. That because he's against immigration, right?
Uh-huh.
There are a number of different places in Europe that are against immigration. Automatically, people think they should align with them. Think about all the other values, right? In other words, immigration is one thing. I'm not, you know, that's good, bad, or indifferent. We can discuss that at a separate time. But let's say you agree with this policy about immigration. Okay, that's very nice. But do you believe in dictatorships?
No.
Do you believe in no free press? These things are much more central to American values than whether you have or don't have, you know, more or less immigrants.
I think that same conversation, though, could be had about Ukraine.
No, I don't think so. In what way?
Well, for example, taking their political opponents, putting them in jail, the oppression of religion.
By all measures, Ukraine is considered a democracy and a successful democracy. The opponents are by and large considered the ones who have been jailed to have been corrupt. Almost everyone in the EU believes that Ukraine has moved much far farther towards democracy than, you know, almost any other country in the past past 2 years of the war, but even before that. So that's just a fallacious argument. It's certainly no dictatorship like Orban. I mean, Zelensky won an election, much to everyone's surprise, but he was elected president and he didn't seize power in any which way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that's a false statement being made or false premise being pushed forward by people who oppose Ukrainian aid.
You know,
Ukraine is a democracy, and Ukraine's values are very similar to American values in most areas, certainly much more similar than Putin's values.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I think, again, I have this problem that people look at, take one issue and say, ah, we agree with him, and he's right. Well, you know, immigration is not the only issue in the world.
Well, I would agree with not settling on one issue. I think we had to take up the global situation, and it's a lot more, to your point, is a lot more nuanced than many people give it credit for. In many cases, especially what you find in Ukraine, is somebody has a white hat, somebody has a black hat, and that kind of defines...
I just want to make one other point that's become clear, and we discussed this previously, but at the current moment, 90% of the money that is allocated for Ukraine is spent in the United States. So the idea that it's corrupt and everything else is also just false, because 90% of the money goes to American defense contractors, by and large. Now, you can get into a whole question of the American defense, you know, you can go into that whole question about, you know, defense contractors and, you know, all of those issues, but it's not corruption inside of Ukraine. It's all going to U.S. defense contractors to provide weapons either to Ukraine or to provide weapons for the United States, for the weapons that we've given to Ukraine to replace them.
Yeah, great point. Again, Mark Shulman, the founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com. I hope you check it out. Mark, always appreciate your commentary here on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Have a great week, Bob.
You as well. Thank you so much. All right, coming up, going to be visiting with John Miltimore. He is the editor-at-large for Fee.org. That and more right here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.